This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm joined by Jonathan Pearson, who's a PhD student at Jodl Bank. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hello, yeah.
You're working on theoretical astrophysics.
I am, yeah. It's all crazy.
And that involves lots of very, very complicated things that makes people's brains explode trying to get their heads around it. So we've set you a challenge of trying to explain what it is that you're working on, which is going to be quite a challenge because people like me have a hard time understanding it. So let's see if we can do this. Now, you work on something called kinky vortons, which are an exciting sounding thing, and that's to do with dark energy. Do you just want to tell us a bit about the background of what this is?
Yeah, okay. So it's a model of dark energy. So dark energy is basically an invention of a stuff in the universe. So you can go out there with a telescope and look at a couple of galaxies, where you look at galaxies a long, long way away, and you find that they're accelerating apart. So it's not because the galaxies are actually moving, it's because the universe is expanding and accelerating.
So that's the space between the galaxies is increasing as time goes on.
Yeah, so the space between the two galaxies is expanding. So if you imagine a balloon and stick two gold stars in it and blow up the balloon, the gold stars move away from each other. It's not because they're actually moving, it's because the balloon is expanding. So the problem is, what makes those gold stars accelerate away from each other? What makes the galaxies accelerate away from each other? So the first place, a good place to start is by considering what the universe is actually made of, the stuff that we know about. So the simplest place to start is what you're made of, which is what's called baryons. That's protons and neutrons. And that's what all the galaxies and stars are made out of. It's what you're made out of. It's what your coffee cup's made out of. Everything around you is made up of baryons. So that's one sort of stuff. The other sort of stuff is radiation, so photons. And that's light. I mean, it's a bit weird to think about something being made out of light. But it has an energy and it contributes to the total content of the universe. So that's two things. Now, you can actually go out into the universe with a telescope and measure how much of the universe is made out of these sort of stuff. And you find out that it's only makes up 4% of the total content of the universe. And so you got to ask the question, what's the other 96% of the universe made of? It's made out of something we don't understand. It's not made out of the same sort of stuff as you and I are. So a lot of very clever people basically came up with two words, both of which are basically labels of ignorance. One of them is called dark matter, and the other one's called dark energy. So dark energy is responsible for the stuff that's making the galaxies accelerate, and dark matter is an extra stuff inside galaxies which provides an extra force in there.
So dark matter was suggested as a way to keep galaxies together, because looking at how fast they seem to be rotating too fast for the amount of mass that we could see, and the light and the stars and the dust in the galaxies. So we came up with this dark matter, and as you say, that works out as about 25% or so of the total content of the universe.
Yeah, which leaves another 75% or something. So there's another 75% of the universe which we still don't understand. So we've already had to invent dark matter, and that accounts for about a quarter. But then there's a 75%. And basically, we just call it a name. We call it dark energy. So dark energy is actually the name for ignorance. It's a name for the quarter of the universe, three quarters of the universe, which you have no idea what it's made of.
That's quite a lot of universe.
That's a lot of universe. It's most of the universe, actually. And so one of the main things we know, it's got the property of actually being sort of like anti-gravity. So whereas normal matter has positive gravity, so two things gravitationally attract, which is exactly why you're sat being pinned
on
to
the
floor now.
listeners hopefully are walking around, apart from if they're on the International Space Station, they're all walking around on the surface of the Earth due to the wonders of gravity.
Yeah, because of gravity. So gravity is attractive. But if something is attractive, that can't make two things accelerate apart. So what we wanted was an idea to explain why two galaxies accelerate apart. So one of the crucial properties is basically it's got a negative gravitational field. So it's anti-gravity, basically. It's a load of anti-gravity in the universe. So 75% or something of the universe is made of this sort of almost anti-gravity type stuff, and we call it dark energy. Then, once you've given this a name to your ignorance, you've got to work out what it is. You've got to produce sort of theoretical models, and then you've got to go away and test them. And so there's loads and loads of different models. Some of them actually sort of try and say that, well, maybe Einstein's general relativity wasn't right. So they sort of try and modify how we understand gravity. Other theories sort of invent substances in the universe. So they invent a substance which has this sort of anti-gravity property. And those sort of basically fall in, those are the main two classes of these models of dark energy. Either modify gravity, so ignore general relativity because it might be wrong, or you invent a new substance. And so the stuff that I work on is inventing a new substance or trying to understand some of the models that have been proposed, some of the theories that have been proposed to be this new substance.
So you're looking at one of these possibilities.
Yeah.
And as we said at the beginning, it's called kinky vortons.
Yeah, so there's lots and lots of different models. There's lots of different theories. And one of them is this kinky vorton model. It's this sort of, it's actually called a domain wall model, and kinky vortons are a domain wall. I'm going to try and explain a little bit about that a bit later on.
Do you want to tell us what a domain wall is?
So a domain wall is a wall between domains. So that sounds really obvious, and it sort of is actually. So a domain is just a region of space. So if you get two different regions of space where there's a sort of a characteristic of space which is different in the two regions, then a domain wall just separates those two regions. So this could be as simple as a garden fence. So if you imagine like sort of terrace gardens with a garden fence going between two gardens, two adjacent gardens, then there's a separation there between one garden and another garden. And that's a domain wall. That separation is a domain wall.
Right, so one might have grass and one might have gravel in the backyard.
So there'll be a garden fence which separates the two. So now there's some interesting properties of the domain wall. So going back to this garden thing, imagine you want to get a tennis ball from one garden to the other garden. So you can't actually pass it horizontal because there's a garden fence in the way. So what you have to do is you have to throw the tennis ball over the garden fence. Now, one of the sort of crucial properties is that as it goes upwards, it gains gravitational potential energy. So that what that means is it has more energy when it's on the top of the garden fence than when it does when it's on the bottom. But the only way of getting the ball from one side to the other was to send it over that point of sort of large energy. And that's another very important property of the domain wall. It's sort of a region of lots and lots of energy. It's got loads of energy in there.
Yeah, so you've got to put energy into getting the ball over the fence.
Yep.
Into your next door neighbour's garden.
Yes.
And that's crossing the boundary or the wall. Now, these domain walls aren't physical objects, are they?
No, it's really bizarre to try and imagine. Basically, a domain wall is sort of, it's a blob of energy. It's not a thing. You can't go up and touch it, but you could get a thermometer, and if you pass the thermometer over the domain wall, it will suddenly read 15 billion degrees or something. I mean, there'll be loads of energy, and then suddenly it'll go back to normal.
It's making me think of force fields in Star Trek or something. It's a point in space separating two places.
That's exactly what a domain wall is. A point in space separating two different regions. And then that separating region is a ludicrous amount of energy. And it's also really, really thin. Really, really thin. It's sort of like it's thinner than the thickness of a human hair. But it's got more energy in it than in all the atomic bombs that have ever been released.
Wow. That's a lot of energy, and that's energy spread out, or is it? It's very dense.
It's very dense. It's on this sort of sheet, sort of like a bed sheet, almost stretched out, which is only like a nanometer thick, thinner than the width of a human hair. This thing, and it's got a ludicrous amount of energy on it.
This is a suggestion for explaining dark energy. So, how would people go around finding this if it's not a thing that you can see, but it's a place in space? How would you spot it?
So, how you spot
without going there?
How you spot these things without going there? Right. Yeah. So there's this thing called light deflection. What this is basically photons, so light, travel next to a big gravitational field. They get bent.
So if you look at stars near to the sun during an eclipse and the light from the background stars has to pass near to the sun's gravitational field, then the light gets bent and the stars seem to shift their position on the sky. And the same happens for galaxies at great distances in the universe as well.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So these the photons that are behind these domain walls, as they pass towards us through the domain wall, they get shifted. So light rays that come through domain walls get shifted, and you can pick up that shift. You can They're shifted in position, and they get redshifted as well.
Okay.
So they're sort of wavelength changes as they pass through the domain wall, or next to a domain wall as well.
So do they always get redshifted, or could they be blue-shifted?
They can get redshifted or blue-shifted, depending
on... Okay, so it can change the energy of the photon as it goes through this barrier.
Yeah.
Okay, so it will change the direction the photon seems to be coming from, and it can change the energy of the photon. So you'd be able to presumably look for that in galaxies.
Yeah, so if you calculate where a galaxy is supposed to be, or it passes behind a domain wall or something, it will shift. And it shifts what's called the cosmic microwave background, which is sort of the relic of the Big Bang, which is left over. And so one of the very important properties, actually, of domain wall is that it's got it is anti-gravity. It's got an anti-gravitational field. It's got a negative gravitational field. So if you get a domain wall and sit it there and put a star next to it, the star and the domain wall will repel gravitationally. Right. So that's a very... It's, I mean, you could, if you get two magnets and put north-north next to each other, they repel.
Hmm.
Whereas usually with gravity, what you think is everything gravitationally attracts, but it's not the case with domain walls. To get a domain wall, you get a star. They'll repel each other, exactly as a north-north does on a magnet.
So where do vortons fit into this?
Another word for a domain wall is actually a kink.
Okay.
So kinky. And now we've got to explain vorton. So vorton basically just means superconducting.
Right.
So a superconductor is sort of like, it's a piece of wire which doesn't have resistance. So if you get a wire and stick a battery on it and take the battery away, the current will still keep going around the wire forever because there's no resistance.
Right, and that's so a on a normal wire, there is resistance, which basically means the electron flow is obstructed by the wire itself.
Yeah.
And so eventually it just stops.
Yeah.
But a superconductor, there is no resistance.
There's no resistor, so it's a superconductor. So superconductors are used at like CERN and stuff like that to make the beams go around and stuff like that.
When it's working.
When it's working, which I assume it is now, but it's not killed us all, which is nice. So basically, so a kinky vorton is a kink solution, one of these kinks, a domain wall, which is superconducting. So you imagine getting sort of a loop of domain wall. So like you get just sort of get a sheet and then stick a battery on the sheet and pull the battery away. There's loads of charge that's going to live on the sheet now, and the charge has to stay living on the sheet. So it becomes a superconducting sheet.
Right, so it's full of energy, and now it's got a charge on it.
It's got a charge on it as well, yeah.
Is the charge like electrons, or it's some other type of charge?
It's another type of charge, yeah. It's a bit of a bizarre sort of charge. It's not charged like electrons, like positive and negatives, that sort of thing. It's a different sort of a charge. That's much more difficult to explain. It's what's called a nota charge.
But we'll leave that to one side.
Okay, so what an actual kinky vorton is when you make your domain wall into a loop. So if you imagine getting a string, an open string, and then closing it back in itself, now it's a loop. That's quite obvious. And then you just get your loop, and then you charge it, and it becomes a superconducting loop. So rather than a loop, you sort of get a sheet, and then you get your sheet, you charge it with this battery, you take the battery off, and it becomes a superconducting sheet. Right. And that's a kinky vorton, a superconducting sheet. So these things are bubbles. These things are loops. So a kinky vorton is a loop, and then these currents, this sort of almost charge, sort of stabilizes it. So if you get one of these sheets and close it back on itself without charge, it will collapse. It's basically like a massive elastic band. So there's loads of energy on these domain walls, and it just collapses like an elastic band.
So is it best to think of a vorton as an elastic band or as a bubble, a soap bubble?
So a three-dimensional vorton is a soap bubble, whereas a two-dimensional vorton is an elastic band. Because a domain wall in three dimensions is a sheet, whereas a domain wall in two dimensions is a line.
Okay.
Because it's separating two regions of space, which is just flat anyway.
Right.
So it's just a line.
So if for a three-dimensional vorton, if you had two of them and they're like soap bubbles, could you get similar types of
sort of
structures that you get if you have soap bubbles, where you get one sat on top of a small bubble sat on top of another bubble?
I assume so, yeah. I mean, they're really difficult to make. That's one of my projects now, is to try and figure out how to make stable blobs.
Right.
It sounds ludicrous to make stable blobs, but it's quite difficult.
So how many of them do you think there would be in the universe? Are they going to be bumping into each other on a regular basis or never see each other?
It's not really like a disconnected bubble. It's the whole universe is in like a lattice of these bubbles.
Right.
So it's like a network of bubbles. And so the sort of cell size between each thing is sort of a few galaxies diameter or something.
Okay, so it's like a foam.
It's a foam.
A foam, like you'd see on your washing up in your sink.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And the galaxies exist within the soap bubbles.
Yep. So the elastic dark energy model, which uses domain walls, is that the universe is a foam of domain walls.
If it collapses, what happens to all that energy?
All the energy, it gets radiated away in like gravitational waves and lots of photons and all that sort of thing.
So if there's one collapsing, I guess it probably wouldn't be too good to be stood anywhere nearby.
Yeah, you want to be as far away as you possibly can because there's a lot of energy which gets released very quickly. And right. These things collapse at the speed of light as well.
Okay.
Which is very, very fast.
But we've never observed these. These are, as we said earlier, these are theoretical ideas.
Entirely
that
theoretical objects that exist on pen and paper and in a computer. They've never, ever been observed. But the hope is that we can figure out how to look for these things properly.
So if they do observe, we're starting to think of ways to find them and be able to spot them in our observations.
Yeah, so that's one of the other lines of work. So we've got to figure out what the universe looks like if it has all these kinky vortons in them. Are there any sort of signatures which you've got to go and look for that you can't explain any other way other than with these kinky vortons?
Okay, so I think I've got my head around these kinky vortons. They're some kind of sheet separating two parts of space. They've got charge on them, some kind of charge, that travels around these sheets. They've got lots of energy, and they wrap around and create loops. Yep. In space.
Exactly. And they've also got anti-gravity. So the gravitational field of these closed loops, these sheets, is actually negative. They're balls of anti-gravity in some sense. Which
that's
is pretty
such a
cool.
good thing.
It's a ball of anti-gravity.
That's really good. I like that. That is, we're properly in the world of Star Trek now.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure if my supervisor's gonna shoot me now.
So there they are being anti-gravity.
In the middle of two galaxies, the anti-gravitational field of this ball will accelerate galaxies away from each other, which is what we observe. Right. What we have never observed is these loops themselves.
Presumably there would be methods, like we were saying before about deflecting light. You'd be able to. There are methods that in the future people might be able to use to look for them.
Yeah, exactly. So some people have done some calculations which say if these things are there, they produce these signatures. So looking at light deflection and stuff like that. But the problem is that instruments at the moment aren't sensitive enough to be able to pick up these signatures or sort of distinguish them from other things.
Right.
So it's something for the future to build better experiments and stuff to be able to look for these things.
Well, thank you very much for explaining what kinky photons are. Dark energy, different ideas of dark energy are things that everyone is interested in who probably listens to the Jodcast. And it's nice to hear about some of the theoretical ideas that people are working on. So thank you for explaining it so well to us, Jonathan.
No problem.